Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello.
To the first ever three bean salad, extra beans.
Chaps, how would you describe this in terms of a kind of bean metaphor?
Well, it's not the bean husk, is it? We don't want people to think of it as a sort of waste product that you get rid of the beans.
Absolutely not. So it's the inner.
It's not the brine in which the beans are soaked.
It's almost. Absolutely not. It's almost. The inside of the bean, the sort of the bean meat.
The bean meat?
What is it inside a bean? Bean flesh?
Well, meat, I suppose. Yeah.
Meat, isn't it? Yeah. Sorry, meat.
So different cuts of meat. There's the breast, there's the the ribs.
The haunches.
The tongue.
Loins.
Loins.
And, of course, the offal.
Yeah, and the slightly gamey eyeballs, knuckles, and sort of spinal segments.
That are very good for a stock.
Yeah. Boil those down and get a very, very rich stock.
So in this metaphor, the normal version of the show that anyone can listen to, what part of the bean is that?
Imagine if you were to lightly chew on a, you know the way you might eat a bean if you're say walking down the street or if you're out and about eating a bean.
Casual bean eating.
It's summer. It's a summer's day.
It's a summer's day, and you know,
you've got a pocket full of beans.
You feel the wind in your hair. You feel the breeze tugging away on your quite tight t-shirt, but you feel good about it. You feel I'm here.
You feel you can pull it off. Today's a day where you feel you can really pull that off.
And you can even feel some of the more exploratory tendrils of the breeze are even, you know, flirting with the hem of your shorts. And again, you feel good about it because it's your time. And the summer is...
And how tight are the shorts?
Well, they're very tight at the top, okay. And they're very loose at the bottom.
So they flare hugely.
It's a bell-bottom shorts. like a sailor would wear.
They're bell-bottom sailor shorts, and the breeze is playing a merry havoc with them. But you don't care who knows it, because you're confident it's your time. The summer is stretching out in front of you. There's endless weeks, hot, sultry weeks for you to... make new friends, explore yourself, explore others, you know.
It's quite pervy, this. There's something quite pervy about it.
There's a very heavy sexual undertone emerging.
There's a ripeness in the fruits that hang from the very...
The fecund pineapples that line the path.
There's a lot of fecund, sort of bloated pineapples just sort of sagging onto the pavement, and a lot of them are exploding. a lot of mangoes rolling around. There's a lot of them. Also, quite a lot of rats and mice and ants have been drawn by all the sort of seeping juices that are.
So it's a typical summer's day.
it's just a lovely classic British summer's day. And, you know, there's a river wending its way to your left and right. Well, to your left.
You're on an island, if it's on your left and right.
Accidentally.
You've strolled onto an island. There's punts, you know. There's punts sort of just laden with fetid fruit, lolling about.
But you don't need to eat any of that fetid fruit because you've got your beans, haven't you?
Well, you've got a nose bag of beans strapped around the back of your head, and you've got your entire front face is just...
You've got your proboscis going.
Your proboscis.
Searching out the beans.
Your proboscis is going in, and you're snorting them up whole.
Whereas with this bean experience, you're savouring the bean, are you? Is that what we're saying? Rather than just sort of gobbling them down.
I thought this experience?
No, that you were just describing what the normal experience
that was the normal
three bean salad is.
So well, take that one and then just imagine it being sort of two or three times more erotic.
Okay.
That's what's happening. No,
the only way that could be more erotic if there were just lots of horses nearby.
Yeah, just imagine that whole the same scene with loads and loads of horses.
Yeah, and some lounge jazz.
Some lounge jazz. Lots of very, 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 very shiny, muscly horses.
Eating oysters.
Eating oysters.
Oh. Sorry, there's something... Sorry, no. There's something about the image of a horse eating an oyster that I find uniquely disgusting.
It's not quite right, is it?
Because they can't throw their head... You know, to eat an oyster, you have to sort of throw your head back and it just kind of goes down, doesn't it? Mm. But a horse would have to really suck it up. The noise it would make, I imagine...
I think someone else would have to throw the oyster down the horse, wouldn't they?
Well, you'd have to fire it down using some kind of like, pneumatic gun.
Mm. Yeah, and it's becoming... With each one of these steps is becoming less and less of a sort of luxury experience, isn't it? And more of a very harrowing.
More something you need to report.
Yeah.
Firing oysters into a horse is a luxury experience.
I think the only way to do it would actually, that's why it's very dangerous, is you'd have to actually get someone to whack, as we know, the one thing you shouldn't do with a horse is attack it very, very strongly from the rear with your fists. But you'd have to get someone to do that in order to get the horse to neigh. Because if the horse neighs, I think it does throw its head back.
As it can rear.
The oyster would slide down, but the cost of that, of course, is having your entire upper body absolutely pockmarked with hoof shaped sores. Which is what happens, isn't it, if you attack a horse from the rear?
So take that.
What?
Take that. Remove any element of peril, and you've got you've got this.
You've got extra beans.
You've got three bean salad.
This extra beans.
Well, put it this way: imagine just anything. And then imagine extra of it. That's better, isn't it?
Okay. But some things you don't want extra of.
Yeah.
Too much ketchup in your bacon sandwich.
Yeah, just a bit sickly. Ketchup's lovely. Too much ruins the whole sandwich. You end up having to scrape it off with a napkin.
Excess brings its problems. I think that's the moral of the tale.
It's a troubling moral because what we're offering right here, right now, is excess, isn't it?
I mean, another way of looking at it is it's just another hour of three bean salad podcast stuff.
Oh yeah,
That's a simple way of putting it.
Just stick with that.
Extra bits
of stuff
we've recorded here and there, and you know, maybe didn't fit into other episodes, and just extra bits.
Thanks, Henry. That's
could have saved a lot of time,
isn't it?
Said that early doors.
Such as the early doors.
Welcome to Three Bean Salad Extra Beans, including extra bits from the shows, bonus material, exclusive content, and miscellaneous.
Extra bits.
Extra, extra. Beans all about it.
Extra Bean. Never been heard bean before.
That was a fabulous meal, thank you. And if we could just have a look at your beans trolley.
Remember that we talked about exercise earlier this month? Well, remember no more because it's happening again.
I did briefly join a gymnastics for beginners for grown-ups club some years ago.
Gymnastics for grown-ups?
That was a bad decision.
Does that mean things like sliding down that long rope?
It means like doing roly-polies and cartwheels and vaulting and that kind of stuff. It's a few years ago now because I was trying to write a show that involved an acrobatic moment. And I thought I've got to warm up to this.
I don't remember this show happening, Mike.
No, that element was cancelled. As I learnt very soon after joining this little club, that I did not have it in me. And I even got a friend who's a kind of, he's one of those people who went to Lecoq, École Lecoq, in Paris. As he's sort of physical theatre type. And he looked me in the eye one day and said, Mike, you will never be an acrobat.
Wow. Bloody That's hell. A big moment in a man's life.
Too old, not bendy enough. Yeah, it all gone. But I had paid for this sort of 12-week class, and I was determined to sort of turn up.
It was quite harsh that he said that to you, you know, while you were and had managed to fold yourself into a sort of Muppets lunchbox. To hear that news,
he told me this is as far as I can get.
That's as far as I can get.
I was crap at the whole thing, and also at one point I accidentally broke wind when I went over a vault and landed badly, flat on my stomach on a mat. And had no control over where the air went and where it didn't go. And I was first in the queue as well for the vault as well. And everyone heard it. And everyone knew what they would have to pass through on their go. So that's the last time I've entered into a formal kind of exercise class environment.
Because now for you, Mike, it's just your main source of exercise now is car park fights, isn't it?
Exactly.
Keep you on your toes.
Yeah.
Go down to Tesco on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Just get it out of your system.
It's lovely to watch him, Mike. He's so light on his feet when he does it. It's so supple.
Yeah. Well,
and it's not about the winning or the losing. It's just about the pounding.
Yeah. It's as much about taking it as it is dishing out, isn't it?
For you? Yeah, very much so.
And then slamming the head in the Hyundai door, isn't it? It's a bam. Yeah.
And the i10 is sturdy enough to withstand that.
Yeah.
Once a week, they can manage it. Yeah.
And what's it? Your catchphrase? You say, I'm gonna wham your head so hard in that Hyundai door, it'll set the windscreen wipers going.
That's right. It's a bit of a mouthful. But they know me down there, so I can sort of rattle out and mumble it a bit. If I've got a few wobbly teeth and a bloody tongue, then they know what I'm saying.
Or you go, the windscrapers bit. Bam. Yeah.
The other one I've heard you shout is, I'm going to reverse over your cock.
Yeah. Which is very hard to specifically just reverse over that, isn't it? I mean, you can reverse over someone's mid-body, but to reverse just over their cock is quite hard, but... You can do that, can't you?
You need the right kind of curve, basically.
Yeah. And basically, you have to reverse it, don't you, with the wheels on an angle. So if you can glance around on a sort of tangent, you can glance the top of the cock off, can't you?
Or you can circumcise.
Yeah, I mean, it's not...
If you've had enough practice.
Yeah, it's there are other ways of getting circumcised, a little bit less sort of
it's
adrenaline fueled, aren't there?
No,
it's quite... Not, yeah. It's a hell of a ride. It's a hell of a ride getting circumcised by you that way. And you will give them a lift to hospital if need be.
Their man, their severed foreskin, of course.
Yeah.
Do you have to pick their severed foreskin out of the tracks of your tyres? So hand it to them ceremoniously.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's sort of been pressed like a rare flower and put it in a nice little book for those as a keepsake.
I can remember very, very vividly the smell of turf, of grass
of
at school.
English turf.
but being on a freezing day, doing the stuff that as an adult you would never really choose to do, unless you're a professional sportsman. But to be on a freezing cold day, shivering, my little beanpole legs with these shorts that look ridiculous on me because I was so beanpoley, the shorts just look massive on me. And just having to go out into this freezing, cold, gross sort of English weather.
Oh, after Christmas, that's when it was savage because the playing fields we used that were on the outskirts of Portsmouth, it was directly underneath a goose migration park. So it during the holiday period, in between us leaving for the last time and starting the term after Christmas, thousands upon thousands, wave after wave of geese would have flown over this field and shat on it.
Shit. And then it'd frozen hard.
Yeah, and it was hard, hard, hard.
Goose shit.
It wasn't wet and boggy. It was hard. So hot, solid, icy earth, atop which was a carpet of the kind of green-white pellets of goose shit, in which you were supposed to be diving, you know, into, you know, Johnny Howard's legs or whatever. The kid who'd gone through puberty at the age of 7 and whose legs could smash you into a fine paste. You expected to dive into his legs, break your nose, and then land skidding through turds.
Was that...
that put quite a lot of us off.
Was that rugby?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, rugby was absolutely... hideous. I mean, when you think about rugby now, for kids, it's like a sort of dystopian thing you'd get on Netflix or something.
Like particularly at the age of sort of 12, 13, when you do have the guys who are suddenly, they've come back from holidays and they're 2 feet taller than you.
Yeah, I mean,
And they've got big hairy bollocks and it's all a bit overwhelming.
I remember I was in the school's B team. I was quite keen on rugby. I really liked it, but I wasn't that good at it. But I got in the B team because basically it was all just based on who was tall enough. So I was tall for a bit because of the way that people's hormones were working out. So suddenly I was like, you're in the team just because I was tall. And I only did one match. I mean, we were playing a school who were like known as being good at it. And our school was never known as being good at it. And I've got such a vivid memory of just driving sideways rain, it feeling about minus 20. Yeah, and then us just getting, you know, that Monty Python sketch where it's adults, it's the teachers versus the children rugby match. Mm. And they're just like absolutely creaming all the children.
Yeah.
It was just that. It was like brutal. Yeah. Like we just all got absolutely smashed by these gigantic sort of man boys and then went home again
That's sort of every match experience I think I had. Also, because my school was quite, they had thoughts above their station, I think, sporting wise. So we didn't do much sport. It was once a week, but it was a grammar school. So I think they thought they were a bit fancy. And so they would organise fixtures with these very, very posh schools elsewhere in Hampshire and West Sussex that did, you know, that trained daily. Mm. And, you know, and they were, some of them were boarding schools where they were extremely well nourished. They'd be eating steak 5 times a day.
All masters of swordsmanship.
Masters of swordsmanship.
Yeah.
The pistol, yeah. Horseplay,
yeah. Yeah.
The works. They could,
yeah.
They could do it.
Wrestling, these, Dutch, yeah, style, Wiltshire style, French style. Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful teenagers with smooth, pimpleless skin,
yeah,
and flowing, curling locks.
And around the side of the sports pitch is just so many maidens peregrinating at all times.
Exactly.
Just, yes.
Yeah. And all united with a bloodlust,
yeah,
for a grammar school boy.
Yeah, yeah. And all of them carrying the severed heads of grammar school boy victims in necklaces, yeah, around them.
Yeah, school prefects from
with their dried up little fair heads.
Yeah, so it was all, that's all I thought that was. It was just getting pummeled. So the earliest I was able to bow out of it, I bowed out.
Now, I tell you what, though, the tides are quite important because I remember on holiday once, we went to the coast as a family when I was a kid and we hadn't worked out the tides. This was in France. This can happen, right, on the Atlantic coast in France.
This really smacks of another story in which your family have attempted to get what? Rid of Henry.
Not another of those. So they stuck me, you know.
Stuck you on a piece of loose timber.
They did the usual fun game of Henry, get back to the shoreline. And this time they tried to make it even more challenging by driving off. I could see them driving off. Well, they tried to trick me. It was good fun, but I could see them driving off. I got picked up by the French Coast Guard. And a couple of days later, it was fun. I had to go through a lengthy reverse custody battle where I had to...
Well, you've had no identity documents on you, right?
Nothing on me.
Of course not.
A kind of reverse Home Alone where you're doing your best to try and
break back into the family home.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's...
And they had bowling balls on strings and, you know...
They had the...
red hot irons. The ceiling.
Fuck off, Henry. part of the game was... Can you not take a fucking hint, mate? They know that blaring out at me. But I was always managed to eventually get back in the house or certainly sleep in the garden or whatever. And but it was that golden childhood, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, emails. Time for your emails. Thank you for everyone who sent us an email to 3beansaladpod@gmail.com. Graham did so. Now, Graham is making reference to last episode where I talked about how we were talking about the Titanic and I talked about how a group of youths had accosted me.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little bit worried about what was going to happen and then they asked me where the Titanic had set sail from.
Yes.
Graham says, I too am at the age where groups of youths are a reason to cross the other side of the road. And I had a similar incident. A friend and I were walking and getting quite tense at the prospect of three lads sat on a bench nearby and were slightly perturbed when they asked us, "Oi, mate, how many kilometres are there in a mile?" Somewhat baffled, but equipped with the knowledge from his memory, my friend expertly answered, and we carried on walking. So, are you correct? Are groups of lads sat around asking questions and furthering their knowledge? No, quite possibly not. I remember shortly after retelling this confusing story to another mate, who told me that this is in fact a tactic, so that you'll get your phone out of your pocket and look it up. Then, once inside of your phone, and having watched you unlock it, they'll assess whether it's worth nicking.
No.
Well.
So Graham is making the claim that when those youths asked me where the Titanic set sail from, they were hoping I'd get my phone out to look it up for them.
But you just gave it a ruddy good old guess.
I just gave it a big old guess and plumped for Southampton.
And they assumed there was nothing but a sort of Nokia 310
or that you were
let this one pass.
All the way down, zero phone. Just a 10p in your pocket.
So be aware. Just be aware. I mean, I don't like to... Oh. I also don't like to spread a kind of... I don't want to give people misgivings about young people. They're just, you know, they might just be... They're just young people hanging out on the street.
Interested in nautical engineering.
Exactly.
Teenagers of today, within, are, you know, the adults of from 6 years from now. The first ones.
As the old saying goes, the 12-year-olds of today will be adults, will be the adults of 6 years from hence.
Well, no, if you're 13, you'll be an adult when you're
18.
And I meant non-teenagers, so I was thinking it was 20.
So what's the saying?
Yeah, well, the teenagers today will be, you know, not they won't be teenagers anymore from 7 years on from now. The youngest, and tomorrow for the ones that are 19 on the eve of their 20th birthday. So there's a 7-year
window.
Margin of error, yeah.
And what's the point you're making based off that observation?
You just want us to remember about time's ceaseless march.
Just remember time's ceaseless march, and, you know, maybe put that might put things in context. And do get your phone insured.
Gonna live forever. Gonna live forever.
Who could forget the immortal lyrics to that wonderful song? I tell you another thing which is immortal. Our chat about immortality. It just keeps on going. Have a listen.
We've had a couple of emails actually about from Australians.
Hmm.
Who were both of them, I think there was two or three emails. All those people were quite annoyed that we were making concessions to Americans.
Right.
Like, very annoyed about it.
The whole of the Commonwealth, we're just treating as one unit.
Exactly.
But it's not that difficult for Australians, because it's just everything's opposite there, isn't it? It's just opposite world.
It's just the other way around.
Yeah.
So they open a Mars bar from the back.
They open a Mars bar from the back. Russell Crowe is called Crow Russell.
Yeah. Toast falls out the bottom of the toaster.
Yeah. A panini is called an inip app.
And toilets flush upwards.
Toilets flush upwards. So, you know, if they can't be bothered to do that extrapolation themselves, I don't see why we should.
We'll just play the whole thing in reverse, surely.
Play the whole thing in reverse. And it'll
make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And obviously they've all magnetised shoes, haven't they? And to keep them on terra firma, haven't they? Magnetised shoes. Is it problematic to suggest that Australia's upside down?
I think you could be accused of being very ethnocentric, Henry.
Right, we're quite northern hemisphere centric. Because, you know, I don't like identifying too hard with any nationalities. Nationalism is a bit toxic. I don't like, you know, referencing my gender too hard or my sexuality. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I want to, you know, put myself into those boxes.
Mm-mm.
But the Northern Hemisphere, till I die.
Oh, yeah.
This hemisphere is my hemisphere.
It's your birthright.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And it is the superior hemisphere.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And if that's cancel time, then cancel
me. They can take it from your cold, dead hand.
You know what I love about the Northern Hemisphere is?
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got everything up.
Deserts?
Yeah, deserts. But we've got everything up here.
Ice?
In the Northern Hemisphere... You can get up, right? You can you can swim before breakfast.
Yeah.
Yeah? Right.
You could ski to lunch.
You could ski to lunch.
Which could be some bit of marsh, couldn't it?
Yeah. Well, you could ski on anything if the skis are good enough.
Mm. You can go to M&M World for lunch.
Yeah, you can eat anything from a baguette to a burger.
You could pickle a gherkin in a bit of North Atlantic.
Yeah.
What's your point, Henry?
Seems like a very unfair question to me, Ben.
I just feel like
it's quite dangerous if I start asking that quite a lot.
Yeah. I think we've got it all in the Northern Hemisphere, haven't we?
So you think you don't need to visit the Southern Hemisphere?
No,
for anything.
I,
We've not got penguins.
Is it time that someone suggests that we build a wall across the equator? And I mean, I understand it will be a very expensive infrastructure project, and that, you know, there'll be parts of the Pacific and the Atlantic where it'd be particularly troublesome. But is it time, guys?
I think it's... Yeah, I mean, the only...
Keep the barracudas out.
I mean, obviously, there'll be some casualties. There'll be some sad stories of families of barracudas where one of them was on the other side of the wall when the thing went through.
Yeah.
But...
It's the greater good.
That's why. It's for the greater good. Plus, that's why. Barracuda slots.
Okay.
How hard is it to put in a barracuda slot? Okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So as long as that barracuda has the right paperwork.
Remember when we were talking about biscuits? So do we. Here's a bit of bonus material.
Well, the biscuit was initially invented, I believe, as a way of getting semen to survive all the way up the...
urethra.
The vas deferens.
All the way up the vas deferens, up the fallopian tubes, round the houses.
Through the trachea.
Through the trachea.
And out the spleen.
Out the spleen again. No, it was a way of... It was what they ate on long-distance...
It was.
Sea journeys, wasn't it? It was...
Like in that TV show, what was it called? When they're in the Northwest Passage.
The Terror.
The Terror.
Terror, that's right. Yeah, great.
What manner of biscuits were those, do you know? Because, I mean, they're not going to be your Bourbons.
No, it wasn't your Bourbons.
They were similar to, I think... Have you ever seen in more recent years... They've started advertising Belvita breakfast biscuits.
Yes.
They're kind of like that. Just like oaty.
They're quite sort of plain and buttery.
Yeah, oaty, buttery.
That Belvita breakfast biscuit, that is an example of the sort of rule of marketing whereby if you put a picture of an ear of corn or a chaff of wheat or a strand, what do you call it? An ear.
A nose.
An elbow of wheat. Or like a
tailbone of barley.
A tailbone of barley.
A chin of hops.
A lobe of spelt.
A dick and balls of frika.
That immediately denotes healthy, hearty breakfast foods.
Yeah, that it denotes healthy, because as soon as you see it, there'll be a few images they use. There'll be some wheat, just a sun over a hill.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes a sort of brown, sort of quite sort of rough fabriced sort of bag that's spilling forth some barley or some corn or whatever.
Yeah. Yes.
And a sort of a wooden, potentially a sort of old, gnarled-looking wooden sort of gate.
And possibly a sheepdog.
A sheepdog.
When I was living in London in a house share, for a short time I lived with somebody who worked in market research.
Mm.
And the big project they were doing while they were living with me was that they were testing out new breakfast concepts.
What?
On members of the public. But it wasn't just like new breakfast recipes. It was more like, can we change the way people think about what breakfast is? You know, could we change things so that people could eat a series of gels? You know, it was that kind of like futuristic thinking.
Oh, that morning gel.
It really was that weird. And I remember once that he came back and he said that he'd spent the day, basically they'd made some mock-up new products and given them to people to see what they thought. And the mock-up product he was doing that day was like a kind of pot noodle style pot that when you opened it would cause a chemical reaction that would then heat up a sort of full English in a pot. So it was like this kind of chemically warmed egg and bacon sort of...
Simply open the pot and stand well back.
A sort of, yeah, like a cross between like a Roman candle and a breakfast, basically.
Do not look directly at the open pot. We cannot emphasise that enough.
Ensure that children and animals are at least 10 yards away from the open pot.
From the phosphorus.
Do not open this pot underneath a flight path.
Do not open this pot if wearing synthetic or non-synthetic fabrics. Ideally, this pot will be opened underneath an upturned bath.
Anyway, he said that basically the reaction from the public was just horror, essentially. Nobody was interested.
Well, there are limits to how far, how far progress can go. There are, you know.
But his whole job was like, what will breakfast look like in 50 years' time? Like, it was all about...
What will breakfast be in space?
Yeah. He was like a futurist thing. Like, he worked for this company that were like, we are trying to shape and predict the future. It was all very soody.
This is how I imagine it. Your body is, you're standing in a transparent tube, right? Your arms are down by your sides. You're upside down.
This is in the future.
This is in the future.
So this would be, I mean, your accommodation in the future.
Yeah. Well.
At the end of your day's work, you just get in your tube.
Tell you what, and it fills with liquid.
They call that a spacious apartment in London these days in the future. £20 billion. Oh, so just the half pint then, is it, sir? Of lager in the future?
Yeah, we get it.
And why is it that you send the amount of money you were going to spend before rather than ordering the drink, by the way? Why is that? That's cause,
we weren't going to scrutinize it. We were just hoping you'd move on.
No, but what I'm picturing is, if you're going to take it all the way in terms of that changing, changing how we eat and stuff. This is why I think we should...
Changing the breakfast paradigm.
Change the breakfast paradigm, because I think you shouldn't. That's why I think there is a limit to progress. It's happening with Kindles. People were into Kindles, but people getting back into books. It's happening with, people getting back into vinyl. So I think there is a point...
People's attitude toward immigration.
People's attitude towards immigration.
That seems to be going backwards. Yeah.
But so let me finish my point, which is essentially... Otherwise... The way it's heading is breakfast will be, you're in the transparent tube, you're upside, normally you're upright during the day.
And it's full of a sort of amniotic fluid, right?
It's full of an amniotic fluid. Above your head, there's a ball, obviously, like in Squid Game, a lot of stuff is going to be to do with balls hanging over your head, transparent balls. So above your head, there's a transparent ball that's full of gel. Now, how much gel have you got? Breakfast gel, obviously. How much gel have you got? And what colour is the gel? That denotes how rich you are. If you've got like a bright golden gel, you're one of the... the top people in society. Yeah. If you've got like a dark green gel, you're not doing so well. They'll be very stratified. Anyway, when it's breakfast time, you go upside down. So your head is then sort of leaning into the gel, but the gel's got quite a sort of...
So you're dipped into the gel, are you?
Well, at the moment, because the gel's quite firm, it's like a sort of quite a solid sort of jelly, and it develops a kind of outer skin during the day.
Yeah.
So what then happens is a mechanism essentially shoves you down into the gel from above. And so your mouth's open, and essentially a bit like a sort of like a Pez, but you are the Pez,
right?
And I think,
but with something that can puncture through, the gelified layer.
When your face punctures through the gel, and essentially you are like a sort of part of a kind of machine that kind of hinges you and forces you down through the gel. Your mouth's open, it goes into your mouth, and then you flip back around again. I think that's where it's heading. You know what I mean?
So it's just a case of getting people slowly used to that.
They have to, you have to get there in steps, don't you?
Yeah, you have to get there in steps.
So to begin with, you're in the tube and then you're forced down into a hot bath of full English breakfast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just like a sort of soup made of...
So that you know that the tube's okay.
Yeah. Oh, they'll just dip you into...
You associate the tube with the reward.
They probably dip you into the they'll dip you into the hot English, into the full English breakfast just for a second, actually, and pull you out. Then flip you around back round again, give you a croissant to eat.
Okay.
But stage by stage, you get less croissant, more flip, more whatever. But I think once you start opening up the idea of breakfast gels and stuff like that, I think you're heading towards that kind of thing, and I'm not in favour of it.
So you're surprisingly conservative when it comes to breakfast, then.
Yes.
You've always liked to take your time over breakfast, though, haven't you, Henry?
I do, yeah, I do. How do you know that?
Well, often when we're working together, you're kind of...
I've seen it happen, like, when I've gone round to your flat to start work and you're just beginning to make yourself a sort of five-stage breakfast.
I do find...
And an hour and a half later, you have to go in and sleep it off and then we can start.
I do find... I think there's something inherently... For me, there's something inherently traumatic about waking up and entering the day. It's a bit like being born. You're kind of wailing, crying into the day.
Covered in gloop.
You have to chop off the umbilical cord that's grown during the night.
Yeah.
It's connecting you to Bluebell.
Covered in gloop, covered in blood. And, there's something about, yeah, the sort of the five-stage breakfast. It's like, give myself enough treats and I can sort of trick myself into entering the day. It's a bit like the day is Hansel and Gretel's Sweetie Cottage. And
it's not that, because he was leaving the bread so he knew he could get home. No, was it? No.
Well,
no, I'm sorry.
Essentially, I leave a sort of trail to trick myself into it. So basically, it's like, oh, because I'm only half conscious at that point. It's like, oh, what's that? It's a boiled egg. I'll eat that. I'm eating on it. I look a bit further up the path. I go, oh, there's a slice of toast with some glistening butter and Marmite on it. I'll have a bit of that. Walk up there, eat that. And I spot, oh, there's a cup of tea. And there's a stage of my stage. And then by the last one, by the time I'm eating the...
The full-blown kedri.
the full-blown kedri.
You're kicking a witch into an oven.
I'm kicking a witch into an oven. I'm sticking it on 250 and I'm ready to start the day. And that witch should come up lovely by lunch.
Because often when we're working together, we haven't worked together in the same room, well, for 2 years now, but in times past, around Henry, there's often a kind of ambience of ongoing ambient breakfast, I think, during the day. A croissant will appear.
Yes.
The coffee will appear. It's just kind of, there's no delineation between where breakfast ends and where the rest of the day begins, I feel, with Henry.
It sort of just slowly peters out into lunch.
In the same way that people often talk about how some writers fear the blank page, I fear the prospect of, say, 2 hours without a croissant. the blank plate, exactly. So I just like the idea that things are broken up. There's always a tea on the go, a coffee coming, a croissant baking, a witch being broken down in the slow cooker. or just watching a witch's hands and feet slowly rotating on the rotisserie they've got set up.
Don't stir it, just leave it
because it's going to break down nice.
Let the Le Creuset do its thing. Let that litter tray really slowly baste that witch.
So, therefore the idea of you simply being dragged out of bed, hosed down, and told to get out, get on the tube, here are some biscuits, but don't worry, there's an ear of corn on the packet, eat these.
Exactly.
And that's anathema to you, presumably, that idea, that breakfast on the go packet.
Oh, God, yeah. I actually really hate walking around while eating, and I some people like to get takeaway from burger places and stuff. Can I say McDonald's? I don't really eat there anymore. But
say McDonald's. I think people have heard of McDonald's.
But for me, even at McDonald's, I want to sit in and make a thing of it, make a meal of it. But sit down and do it properly.
Excuse me, I can't. Where's the maitre d'? I've not met. I've been sat here now for 10 minutes, and I've
there's
seen,
no sign of a tablecloth.
I've seen hide nor hair of the maitre d'.
Fish of the day. There's filet o fish again. Interesting, good.
Can I have the filet o fish of the day, please?
And the fish is just fish. Just fish. Yeah, okay.
And these fries are French. What? Garlic? Is it garlic? Is that why they're French?
It's probably garlic. He doesn't know, but it's probably it's probably garlic. And then Quinn, the Chateau de Seven Up. This year will be fine. This year's a Seven Up.
Just your table Seven Up is fine. Go to the theatre, you see.
I can have a little taste of the 7-Up before you... No, sign, go, no. Just, I didn't want to check that it hasn't... No, but it's fine. No, you, no, it's such a good place. It's such a good place. They didn't even know, you didn't need to have a little taste of the 7-Up because almost... My friend, who I used to live with, back in the bachelor days, pretty... we had a really stinking, disgusting flat we lived in. And it was really grim. And... But my friend, he couldn't get out of bed in the mornings. He was the worst morning person I've ever known, this guy. And he came up with all these tricks to trick himself to get out of bed, right, to actually be able to get up in the morning. And one of the tricks he came up with was to put a packet of biscuits on the other side of the room of his bedroom.
And then... When the rats began to eat the biscuits, he'd have to get out of bed and deal with the rat problem.
The race was on.
Exactly.
He'd grab his cosh and he'd set to work.
So the alarm would go off, and he would. The idea was that he would get up in order to eat a biscuit, but the biscuits were on the other side of the room. He tried it with the biscuits next to him initially. That didn't work. It was just him and the rats together feasting on the biscuits. It was a lovely time. It was like, why do I need to get out of bed at all? Just me and the, hey, Steve, how you doing? Yeah, high five. Ooh, tiny little scrapey claw.
Fire up an old episode of Frasier on the laptop.
The rats all sitting down his leg.
Yeah.
They're not concentrating on Frasier. They don't.
They like it when Niles comes on. But outside of that, they're not interested.
Yeah, they freak out a bit with the dog, don't they?
They freak out a bit with the dog. So that worked for a bit, right? The alarm would go off. He'd wake up. He'd go, there's biscuits on the other side of the room. He'd go and get the biscuits. And obviously, by that point, he's up. That's the idea. But then there came a point where it wasn't working anymore because the alarm was going off and he was in such a deep sleep that he kind of, his consciousness wasn't getting up to a level where he could sort of, he was aware that there were biscuits. He's sort of forgotten about the biscuits. So he was so deep, he couldn't get to a conscious level where he could think about biscuits. So what he then did was he worked out that he could record his own alarm on his phone, and he recorded an alarm.
OT chocolatey hobnobs. Just over the other side of the room. There they
are. Smooth, ooh. Smooth. Buttery. OT hobnobs. It's Thursday. It's Garibaldi morning.
Wow. Picture calf muscle of barley gently undulating in the breeze. He genuinely recorded himself going, biscuits. And I would hear this. I would be in the flat up and I'd hear his alarm going off and it was him going, biscuits, biscuits.
Can I just say this is absolutely mad?
No, it's 100% true. It's him going, biscuits, biscuits. There are biscuits in the other side of the room. Biscuits, biscuits. And I'm not joking, he was 100% serious because he could not, it was a huge problem. He could not get up in the mornings and he thought that would solve it.
And did it work? Did that new version of it work with the biscuit alarm?
I think, how long was the alarm going off before he actually...
Well, quite a long time, because it would really annoy me hearing him saying biscuits from his room. I think it did work for a bit, and eventually he then had to try something else. I'm not sure what happened after that.
Mike, I assume Pam eats biscuits.
Pam does eat biscuits. Again, I mean, like Bluebell, it's the sort of meat you don't meaty component. Sometimes there's cheese in them.
Oh, really?
They vary. Try and mix it up a bit.
Because a dog's kind of entire life, right, is based around trying to get biscuits. That's kind of their animus. Like that's.
Oh, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah, that's. Yeah, she just wants to eat a thing. She doesn't mind too much what it is. Could be a biscuit. Could be corner of a bed. Could be a bottle of shampoo that someone's left somewhere on the floor.
But it is a bit like the thing that dog owners don't really like to talk about. It's almost like the elephant in the room is that, oh, my dog is so well-trained. He'll do absolutely anything. He's so intelligent. If I give him a biscuit, he'll do anything. I mean, he'll run across the room and he'll come back to me if I give him a biscuit. And, he loves my children. He hangs around with them and he spends a lot of time with them, so they give him biscuits. And you're right. Everything is in return for a biscuit. They're so intelligent. I mean, he knows that if he comes up the stairs right now with a newspaper in his mouth, I'll give him a biscuit. You're right. Their entire universe is sort of biscuits. It's the biscuit. Biscuit lie, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're just doing it for biscuits. I mean, all they're thinking about is biscuits.
They're basically, they're performing love towards you because they want a biscuit.
The love is for the biscuit, you suggest.
Well, no, I think that's...
I don't think I can handle that idea.
Well, whenever people say that or that kind of thing, I always think to myself, because people like to say things like, you know, the animal doesn't really love you. It just loves the biscuit. I mean, Well, we're saying that now, aren't we? Anyway, Ben's just said that.
I'm saying that.
Yeah. Well, it's different with Pam.
It's different with Pam. But also...
I'll happily concede the point with all other dogs.
But people also say that with Bluebell and cats especially. They go, you know, it doesn't really love you. It's just there for the food. Just there because whatever. But what the way I like to think about it is not so much, you know, is the animal's sort of expression or understanding of love, similar to ours, but is ours that different to theirs in the sense that, you know,
the only reason you love your
wife gives you biscuits.
Wife is because she gives you biscuits.
Well, I'm not going to say it as boldly as that. But what I will say is we have biscuits.
And she's the one who got them.
She got them. And, you know,
well, she's a woman of means, after all.
No, but do you know what I mean? Like I think, like, we all. Oh, now here's the one that makes me think about it. When Bluebell, when a cat rubs its face on you, it feels like it's being affectionate.
Mm. Yeah.
What it's actually doing is rubbing saliva out of glands in the sides of its mouth onto your body so that it can recognise its spatial environment and its territory better. Okay, I mean, that's the cynical way of looking at it.
And the correct way of looking at it.
But what I would say is are we that different? Mike, when you hug your wife, when you rub your face...
I'm just leaking saliva.
Exactly. And she's leaking...
across her shoulder and the side of her face so that I can correctly identify her the next day. It's true. It's all glands. We have a very glandular marriage, but we're open
about
it.
It's all glands, but it is all glands.
It's all glands and biscuits.
And when the poets write their poems about how much they love someone and all that stuff, it's all basically...
Who's really writing it, eh?
Who's really? It's the glands.
The glands.
The glands. It's your hand glands. They're controlling the pen.
And who's publishing it, really?
Yeah, a bunch of...
It's Big Biscuit.
Big Biscuit. But we are just a series of relatively organised glands. That's what a human being is, isn't it?
Just lusting for biscuits.
Just lusting for biscuits.
That's very profound, Henry.
Thanks. Thanks, mate.
And now strap in for some bonus material from the zombies episode. I think most people find that there's a lot of fun to be had with zombies. I think I find them quite depressing somehow. Something about the average zombie film, I find them quite bleak.
I think they're meant to be bleak. Yeah, right?
That's sort of, they're affecting you on a sort of emotional level, those films. Were you just sad on their behalf? Or
I think so, a bit. And I know there's supposed to be an element of bleakness, but most people who talk lovingly of zombie films tend to... I mean, it's a right rollicking roller coaster fun ride, is the way they seem to think of zombie films. And I certainly have enjoyed some zombie action in the past. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong, guys. I remember seeing a tweet by someone I sort of knew a bit personally, who had tweeted a picture of themselves in a B&Q or some hardware store, holding this great big ugly-looking knife. It's about a foot and a half long. That sort of had a kind of beak at the end of it, so it wasn't quite a scythe. I don't know what you'd call it.
A knife with a beak?
Kind of. It looked like a sort of, you know, our scythe is sort of curved blade. This was, like, broader and slightly curved with a little sort of bladey beak at the end. And it was a picture of him holding it in a sort of clenched fist and talking about, well, I know what I'm packing in my go bag for the apocalypse. Bring on the zombies, essentially, something like that. And it did occur to me a bit that he was holding this dirty great knife in this shop and mostly fantasizing about hacking a creature to pieces.
So hang on, why had he bought it?
I don't know. I have no idea. I assume it's a gardening implement, is it?
So was it someone you knew?
Vaguely, yeah.
Holy hell.
Vaguely knew them.
Time to do some serious deadheading.
Exactly. So I don't know if they require deadheading on that level or if they have a field of wheat that they need shifting. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it was a heavy-duty piece.
Because obviously, I mean, this might be too grim to talk about. There was that time when the fairly well-known food writer A.A. Gill shot a baboon so that he knew what it would feel like to shoot a human.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
He wrote it in a column as if it was the most normal thing in the world to say that he'd done that. And everyone went,
this is a crucial experiment.
Yeah.
Conducted on behalf of mankind and its thirst for knowledge.
And everyone just said, oh, he's a psychopath.
Well, it used to be the case, didn't it, that to join certain organisations, you would have to kill a person, wouldn't it? Be like,
like the WI.
The WI had it.
I mean, the intelligence and enforcement wing of the WI.
Yeah. It's the surest way to show allegiance to a cause is you get taken out into the street, they point to someone at random, and they go, if you want to be part of this club, that person's got to die. Do it.
If you want a Cine World card.
If you want. And all the benefits that goes with that. So bear in mind.
15% off popcorn.
Yeah. 15% but it doesn't include the pick and mix.
15% off popcorn, not including pick and mix. And remember, you get one film half price per month, assuming you pay full price for three other films per month. It's incredible. Yeah?
So take this beaked blade.
Take this beaked blade.
The beaked blade.
The beaked blade. And tear that lollipop lady's head off. Or this little Cineworld world card can just walk its way back into my pocket. Back to you. Oh, he's gone. Oh, you have to pay full price for four films per month if you want to see four films per month.
Oh, and you're suddenly paying extra for 3D glasses. Oh.
And remember, there's probably at least two films per month that come out that you might actually want to watch.
I think you're right, though, Henry, that there's like gang initiations, aren't there, where you're meant to go and stab someone or whatever at random.
Well, Jim, but to join the Beans, we had a similar thing, didn't we? But we just had to go and rob someone up the wrong way. Remember? So
it's a total stranger.
Yeah, it's just a slightly more watered down version.
Yeah, I really got up the nose of a librarian.
You really did. I mean,
I was just going, so what? I can borrow a book and not pay anything. And I wouldn't let that go.
Yeah.
And they were saying, yes, that's how it works. I was saying, but surely I've got to slip you a few quid for this.
Yeah.
This is a quality Grisham. This is a hardback.
Yeah. And remember, I was standing in the corner, just monitoring. Behind a potted plant, monitoring, waiting. Right. And Mike was in disguise as one of those library trolleys, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Was. Mike was right up against your leg.
Yeah.
He had his face, and he's poking through a copy of, was it Barnaby Rudge?
It was.
We made it look like your face was just the front cover, but it was actually your face. So we'd made you look Dickensian, hadn't we?
Yeah, I looked Dickensian and you put a little ginger wig on me.
Put a little ginger wig on him.
And a blue cockade.
A blue cockade.
In my hat.
So if anyone tried to withdraw that book that day, they'd have had a nasty shock, wouldn't they?
Luckily, we know that in libraries, the only books that are taken out are the Grishams.
Exactly.
The rest are essentially a kind of set dressing.
Strategic choice.
They're that book wallpaper you can get, and that's what they are.
Yeah.
And behind them, there's not books. Behind that, it's just cables and wires powering the Wi-Fi, which is the only other reason people go to libraries now.
Oh, yeah.
But, Mike, you were listening
out. Library, obviously, you know, is bibliothèque in French.
Yeah.
It comes from the Greek biblio, meaning to read a John Grisham novel.
To read a John novel while experiencing decent Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Which is the tech bit. Yeah.
So it's bibliotech.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a spy who's in trouble. He's very tense. He's maybe trapped in a lift. Something fairly conventional is happening.
He needs a lawyer for some reason.
He's a lawyer. It's more legal, isn't it? Yeah. He needs a lawyer.
He's in the legal department of the CIA.
He's facing a fairly conventional set of problems.
He's working long hours.
Someone is claiming to be the best. And he's not sure if they are, because it could be they're a bit of a maverick.
Yeah.
So you're experiencing that, and at the same time, that's reminded me. I need some new flip-flops, and you're buying them online at the same time. You're doing both.
And that is why we must protect libraries.
Our sweet, sweet, sweet libraries. Not that.
The beating heart.
Not only that, libraries are the only people that employ the ancient carpentry technique of the very, very low wall and low door.
What?
Well, yeah, often the librarian will be sat behind on a desk behind a kind of in a
I
room.
I think you've gone into the children's bit where they have those playhouses. Children like to read it.
I assume that
Did
was
you
the librarian.
The children read the 4 year olds.
I assume that was the librarian's office, and he or she was just very small.
Mean? Is the little swing door the bottom of a barn door?
Yeah,
like a horse door. What are they called?
Yeah, I don't know. They didn't have a name.
Like a horse door.
Like a horse door.
Or a cowboy saloon door that's sunk.
Yeah.
Yes, a low saloon door. Yeah. Yes.
But we
remember that moment when you, as a kid, obviously you go to the library as a kid with your mum or dad or whatever, and they go, right, you can get your five books, however many you're allowed to get, and you're picking them all up. And then there comes an age, isn't there, around, I think, 13, 14, where you're just thumbing through all the kids' books, and then a librarian you've never seen before appears out of a shadow in the corner and goes, "Oi, come over here."
and you wander over and they press a copy of John Grisham's The Pelican Brief into your hand.
This is all you need, son.
And they say, it's time to leave childish things behind. You're a Grisham reader now.
Yeah.
It's an amazing moment.
And everyone's waiting for you at home.
Yeah. You get home, everyone's dressed as John Grisham.
The bunting's out.
Yeah.
There's a Grisham cake.
Yeah.
Your dad's sort of kind of inch thick of icing and then just some lamb mince in the middle.
And you have to smash your way through the icing to get to the mince with a little gavel you get given, don't you? Yeah. You're handed your first gavel in a little felt case. Whop it out. Smash through the icing, get that mince down you.
Amazing moment. So, how I got up. That's how I rubbed someone up the wrong way. What did he do, Mike, to get into the beans? I can't remember.
I mislabeled a yogurt. And I went into a branch of Tesco's and I graffitied on a strawberry yogurt. And so it looked like it was raspberry. Right.
That's right.
And then we had to follow the guy home who'd bought it all the way home.
Yeah.
And he didn't eat it for 3 days, irritatingly. Yeah. We just had to watch him.
And then,
it was the wrong flavour. He was a bit rubbed up the wrong way, but just to confirm that he knew it was me, I tapped on his kitchen window and said that was me. That was
What we're looking for is the tut, isn't it? Mm. So as soon as they go, so in the old days it would have been obviously to join this club, you have to grot that person or stab their eyes out, halve them down the middle, whatever, you know. Whereas our more gentle version, is that
some people.
So you've written raspberry on the...
I was looking forward to that strawberry yogurt.
Yeah.
And you'd managed to write the raspberry so well, hadn't you got the font right? He genuinely thought he'd bought the wrong flavour. He hadn't... He didn't. It didn't look like it had just been scrawled on himself.
It was just a very odd... It was slightly alarming first taste, even. Mm-hmm. And then he realised...
Because he was expecting strawberry and he got raspberry.
Yeah. It was just lucky, wasn't it? Different. He was expecting a synthetic strawberry and he got synthetic raspberry. And it was just, just... slightly discombobulating for him.
And they're very close, aren't they, in flavour? So it's lucky that you got someone that was so on it in terms of...
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's why I tapped on the window to make sure that he knew that he'd been had.
Although, we never really discussed it at the time, but it's also possible he was actually rubbed up the wrong way just because you were tapping on his window. That might be why he sighed.
He might have wasted 3 days on...
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame. Well, I've rubbed up myself the wrong way in that case.
Yeah.
So I'm doubly in.
And of course, he lived on the ninth floor of that block of flats.
Mm.
So you spent three days constantly with a jetpack on, just on the outside of the window.
Yeah. Because I couldn't get on any abseiling courses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'd burnt a lot of bridges, didn't you?
And a lot of trousers.
But having to talk to your military tech friends back from the Portsmouth days.
Mm.
To pull in a lot of favours, didn't you, to get that jetpack?
And I owe a lot of favours now as well.
Yeah.
I mean, 2022 is going to be tricky, I'd say.
Got favours all over the shop.
Mm. And of course, Henry, yours was a masterstroke.
Yeah. Well, I took a small tree took it into a dry cleaners. and said... I need this for a formal event. Can I have it? Can you do it by next Tuesday? and the guy, weirdly, he took it better than I was expecting, which was a bit of for a minute there. It looked like it wasn't.
He gave
work.
It a go, didn't he? He actually gave it a go.
Yeah, he was.
He did a pretty decent job. He replaced the buttons, which I was surprised by.
Mm. Yeah, but it was excellent customer service there. But in the end, I just started yanking all the shirts off the rails until he got fucked off. And
you were in.
And then I was in.
Okay, so that was the first ever edition of Three Bean Salad Extra Beans. How does it feel, guys? Whew.
Feels good. Congratulations, dear bean listeners. Congratulations. It's a world first that you've just experienced there. And you must be exhausted. But hopefully... Yeah, hopefully beyond that exhaustion, there's a feeling of inner peace at the end of it all.
Yes, you've listened to Extra Beans. You know that you'll never be the same person again.
Thank you for your lovely support. It's genuinely appreciated.
Thank you so much, patrons, for supporting Three Bean Salad.
And he sounds insincere when he says that, but he does mean it.
He sounded incredibly insincere.
Mm.
I suffer from British insincerity syndrome.
Mm.
It's impossible for me to say anything sincerely unless it's help, help, for the love of God, the bottom half of my body is being eaten by the metal jaws of this harvesting device.
Well, that's the only situation in which you'd be able to...
It's one of the only situations where I just will be 100% on the money in terms of sincerity, in terms of what I'm saying.
You just sound as sincere as you feel. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope to one day see that.
Thank you. And I imagine, Ben, you will see it from the vantage point of the person, you know, driving that harvesting machine.
I think we all know who that's going to be. Got my licence coming through the post as we speak.
Hey, you've been doing all your harvesting belts, haven't you?
I've been doing on all my little agricultural machinery courses.
You've been doing yours,
a great personal expense.
Just eating away.
Children have been on 1 meal a day for the whole year. So
because you promised me years ago, you promised me that you would eat my lower body up in the metal jaws of a harvesting device. And I said, you'll never get the qualifications.
Yeah.
But if anything, he's now overqualified. He could feed you through a seed drill. He could thresh you.
He could separate the inner sort of wet bits of my body from the husk.
I could silo you, motherfucker.
Could you spray me over a sort of 2,000 acre area?
I could aerially spray
my plane.
I could crop dust you.
You've got so many options. Or, but you know what I reckon you'll choose? You could do all those things. All those things using chemical fertilizers and the latest cutting edge technology. At the end of the day.
Just to plow you into the earth by hand. Just to hoe you.
just to hand scythe me.
Just Mike and a load of medieval peasants all going to town.
Yeah. All under the watchful eye of a donkey.
Yeah. Just a couple of Saxons and an ass. That's all I need.
Keeping it old school. And then, of course, you can sell bits of me then at the quaint village shop you'll be running.
I'd probably just let the field run fallow and then sell it to developers in a couple of years' time. Someone concrete all over the top of it.
Oh, Mike, that's the one thing I said to you. Please, if it's going to happen...
Your mistake was telling me that. That you didn't want a series of affordable, semi-detached and detached 2 to 3 bedroom houses built over your grave. Tough luck.
This is starting to sound like a Christmas movie now where Ben might try and stop that happening and actually have what I always intended, which is for my corpse to... You know, end up being, in some way, taking part in the fundaments of a sort of gingerbread resort.
Well, and over the course of the movie, I both fall in love with your corpse and realise that my corporate job isn't bringing the happiness I want.
Exactly.
As your corpse slowly liquefies, then mixes it with some melted ball sweets, turns it into stained glass for the gingerbread house.
And Mike... whose moustache gets slightly bigger in every scene in this film as he gets more and more angry and more corporate and more merciless in his desire to and wants to add more and more stories to the car park that he wants to build on top of me.
I'd get my comeuppance in that film, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
Mm, don't know about that.
Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons, thank you for listening and... We'd like to send you back into the world with the soothing sounds of Mike and Ben reading today's Tide Times for Goose Bay, Labrador.
These are the Tide Times for Goose Bay, Labrador on Wednesday the 29th of December, 2021. Low tide, 1:07 a.m. High tide, 7:09 a.m.
Low tide, 2:10 p.m. High tide, 7:41 p.m.
Sunrise will be at 8:17 a.m. and sunset will be at 3:50 p.m.
Moonrise will be at 1:23 a.m. and moonset will be at 12:34 p.m.
Tide times for Goose Bay, Labrador, Thursday the 30th of December, 2021. Low tide, 2:07 a.m. High tide,
8:12 a.m.
Low tide, 3:09 p.m. High tide, 8:52 p.m.